podcast, it's something to share.
Yeah,
I really enjoy your use of what came from the fire sermon in particular, not just the fire of lust and the fire of aversion, but the fire of delusion as well.
Delusion,
and, and because I just went through something recently, which is why I kind of left a bit early yesterday.
Yeah.
Did the same thing. It's a piece of conceptual art whereby the conceptual artist Golden Sandy from Sweden.
A conceptual what? I'm sorry.
Conceptual artists.
Conceptual artists,
yes. And they're looking at the kind of, you know, emptiness of our financial system, I suppose. And this mechanism called short selling. And they call, they actually had a so-called magic show called Acid Money.
Yeah.
And as you might know,
it is a magic show, isn't it?
Acid burns.
Yeah.
So what they did, they used the mechanism of getting the audience to buy shares in this little enterprise of short selling. And they would target one of these destructive companies that we can say is corroding the real economy just for their own profit and greed. And so we, by using a thing called short selling, so instead of making a profit yourselves from a company profiting, these people use an algorithm to speculate as to when they will make a big loss. And it sounds crazy. It does sound crazy, and indeed it is. It's absurd. But so when the company reaches a certain point that loses a certain amount of value in its share value, the people who invested, who engage in short selling, actually make a profit from that loss. It's hard to conceive. But so they turned the magic show.
Interesting.
Yeah, and I think you might like to be able to use it as an example. Perhaps
making a profit from the loss. Actually, this is something that I feel like is a really excellent analogy in this case, because so many people are afraid with regards to these kinds of teachings. And again, it comes back to our self-identity and what we think we are as human beings, and even like what we value, our sense of worth and all that. And we can experience in this path of practice then what it's like without these things. People imagine it's going to be some terrible negative vacuity and like the things that are all of real value and real enjoyment and really like the grist of the life, that all that's going to be lost and that's going to be awful. There can be such an imagination. And even for these things, like greed, for example, it's like it has a life unto itself. We talk about it as if it is ourself. But when we start to see and understand about it, we recognize in a way it's a force unto itself. It's kind of like mistletoe, I suppose, which can grow in a tree and grow on it. The tree is not identified by the mistletoe. The tree doesn't have to have mistletoe. Mistletoe may be there and be consuming it, living together, or it may not be there, tree without mistletoe. Yeah, I don't know if there are trees with mistletoe here or not, and if it's a good analogy. But I try to just use it as a kind of neutral analogy, but may or may not be there. Yeah? And when it's not there, when we experience it not being there, the experience actually is very different than what some people imagine. There is an experience of profiting in that. When someone gets a sense of mindfulness and gets a sense of the clarity and gets a sense of the groundedness and gets a sense of what it's like to be alive as a human being without completely being obsessively and compulsively propelled by and consumed by all of these things, what that's like, we know for ourselves there's enormous profit in that, even in just what it feels like, even in just the quality of our experience, which really is what we'd say is like the basis of our life. Isn't that what we're hoping, what we're looking for, is to have really like a, you know, wonderful quality of experience of life? And it touches on that. That's what's going on. So really a great, great profit from the loss of things that do not necessarily, are not necessarily the identity of our lives. And so I have to say, for 30, 40 years of working with these things, this is what I find most excellent, really, is, you know, getting a feeling for and having the experience of the benefits of this path of practice and the relief that there is to just have so much less of this obsessive, compulsive, burning you up, eating you up stuff, which, you know, in its absence, again, we don't feel, I would say, we don't feel less like ourselves. We feel like some kind of plague that was afflicting us is gone. Mm-hmm. Yeah? Just like that. So thanks so much for mentioning that. That's so, so valuable. And I know at least in the United States, there's so many people who are afraid that Buddhism is nihilistic. They see so much like not this, not that, not the other thing. And then, you know, it seems like, then what? And then you can open your mind and be free. Right? And that is so wonderful. But in imagination, it seems like, no, these things I'm clinging to, like, you know, it's so scary. If I let go of that, then I'm afraid, like, what will die? Sometimes it's the voice of the greed itself that's saying, the greed itself is saying, if I'm not fed, I will die. But that I is not I, me, exactly, right? I mean, that's the point. Or the hatred itself is saying, if I don't get this fuel, I'm in danger of disappearing. Yeah? Feed me, feed me. Yeah?
That's the financial system.
Yeah.
Short-selling. Yeah.
And we can really see, this is a way we can understand also non-self in it. We think about self with regards to this body, but we see these are just patterns, really. And whether it's the coming together of these aggregates or whether it's the coming together of people within a system, all of these are systems, yeah? And so you're talking at another level of systems. And when we look at systems in this kind of way, we can very much see the presence or the absence of these things. And even from a Buddhist standpoint, you know, gauge, is it healthy or is it wholesome? Is it beneficial or is it harmful? By the presence or absence of these factors within the system, by those dynamics, we'd say. Yeah? And systems do not necessarily need these factors to exist. Yeah? I mean, in terms of human life, this is one of the great and wonderful things for the Buddha's awakening. There were many practitioners at that time, like the Jains, for example, who were expecting to experience the highest bliss at death. And yet the Buddha asked one of them, you know, has anyone been able to come back from the dead and to testify that that's really working like that? And, well, no. And is it a safe investment? Is it a wise investment to invest everything in something that you're only going to be able to experience after death and no one's able to testify to it? The Buddha asserted himself that he felt it was an unwise investment, and that what he had experienced and what he was sharing can be experienced in this life. And there are those that he could testify to it, and also his other students, his other disciples, those who had realized the benefits for themselves could also directly testify to it. So it wasn't just a matter of faith, it was a matter of experience. Yeah. So, question from someone else?
Can I just ask one question? Sorry.
Wait.
It's about Heraclitus.
Yes, but after the...
Okay,
because I want to give a chance to others. And if anyone is around in a couple more minutes, then, and if you're here, then I will happily come back again. Please.
Do you think places have a special quality? Because
yeah.
I went to that mountain where the Buddha gave a fire sermon.
Oh.
And it was just an amazing experience.
Yeah. I see how mind and how the mind is penetrates matter. Yeah, we can see that for ourselves, even in real time, how it's happening. If we're a practitioner of mindfulness of the body, mindfulness of feelings, mindfulness of the mind, we see a thought arise, then we see the cascade of effects at the physical level. This is very dynamic within the body. But then we can also sense, if you've gone to a meditation retreat center and then people are practicing meditation deeply and you come in the door and like you can just feel it thick in the environment. And then even it's break time and you're coming in after the lunch and no one else is there and still it's empty of humans and it's still thick in the environment. It's like it's there in the air, it's there in the walls. Air moves and changes more quickly and easily. Water a little less so, but also changes quite quickly. Our bodies, so much water is there. I think it's one of the main conductors. other things like rock more slowly. And for some kinds of strong impressions like this, having been in Sri Lanka recently and being in some of the old, you know, rock formations that are the place of practice, according to the legends, practice of many arahantas, going to sit there myself just with an open mind, I got the distinct impression, yes, I think there really were many arahantas here. There's something, some kind of pattern, something that it's like it's just coming up out of the rock and into the body, and like the knowing in the body itself is able to understand, right, I know I can understand what this is, until it's percolating to the level of like cognizance and even being able to put it into words, like, oh, this is how the Dhamma teaching can come, not only from words, but can pass, I mean, even just through the ambiance of the body and matter, when there's awakened awareness there, yeah? We can see this in each other. We can see, like, what kind of quality is exuding from the body. And maybe we can sense, you know, like my grandma passing away, I received some item that used to be hers. Even with my eyes closed, holding it in my hands, it's like I could feel something of her, the patterns of her life, her heart, her mind. They're changeable, they're not permanent, but some things change and shift much more quickly. I'd say air, more quickly, water a little less so. Soil also quite movable. Some of the very hard rocks seem to be able to hold these things in a perceptible kind of way for a longer period of time. So empty stone churches in New York, when I'd go to visit the relatives, even they're empty at that time. The great stones going inside, sound of silence, and like something held within there that I would perceive then in the body as being like the heart of the religion. And it felt like it's like coming out of the stones. At that time I couldn't explain it, but now I understand a little bit better about how these things work. So, yes. And it makes us, if we recognize the process, our own bodies and also upon the world around us, upon others, even upon what we'd say is inanimate matter, and then the effect that that can have on others, ideally, that can make us, in being conscious, in being aware, that can make us benevolent and careful and mindful, and we can realize the, you know, the real blessing and benefit, the impact that we can make in very simple ways, even so much as what kind of mind our bare feet touch the earth with, yeah, or our hands. The gaze of our eyes, what's being shared, so it can make us humble and be a great inspiration and support for our mindfulness. Do I have time for one more question?
One more.
Okay. That would be one more question from someone else. Yes?
Question. Okay. No more.
Please.
I'm sorry if I fell asleep at the back, but did you actually read out the Fire Sutra?
I didn't actually read it out. It's relatively short, and it's available on the web in multiple translations, as well as the Pali, as well as the Pali text. So I would encourage, if you haven't seen it before, or you'd like to revisit it, if you have a way to access it.
Have a look on suttacentral.net.
Yes, then you can.
Suttacentral.net, S-U-T-T-A.
It has a search box, and you can just put in Fire Sermon. So yeah, please welcome to take a look. And does anyone else have a question that's related to the sutta itself? Question or insight? Yeah,
I'll grab the last
please.
Question.
Yeah.
All right. I'm wondering. So when we're feeling ourselves really in the midst of the fire with the fear or with the anger
yes.
or just. And for me, I can feel it.
Yes.
I'm like, oh, this is burning.
Yes. What? Mindfulness of the body really, really gives us a basis to actually see and know and understand these things for ourselves. So we don't have to only be like looking at the theory or what something else is telling us or someone else is telling us, but really to know it ourselves.
Yeah, and then what to do.
Oh. Well, wise choices are available for what you're seeing and knowing. You know, you can also look and see, like, how did I get into this? And do I know something about myself for, like, how these things can calm down? Is it skillful for me to be going further into this? Or is it time to put on the brakes or to steer in a different direction? When we have that awareness, when we can really sense that happening. Sometimes with mindfulness of the body, we actually can get the message from our body for some people. Like it's like seeing what's going on in the body can be the clue that there's something going on there that can really let us know in a very honest and very direct way. What's happening, and then the question, what is wise, what is skillful, knowing ourselves that these things do rise and pass according to conditions. So like what conditions are feeding or further fueling or perpetuating, and what conditions are like defueling, not perpetuating. To get wise and savvy through our observation and through our experimentation, through our practice with ourselves about these things. And if we talk about elements, as I was before, then say it would be the kind of fire that would be helpful to like put into the lotus pond or to bring some water to or to bring to earth in terms of element practice, then what kinds of things, sometimes even physically, touch with the water element or coming to earth can actually help in that regard. But there are the things that are like that in our minds, in our hearts as well, that as we come to know ourselves more and how the things are working for ourselves, we can understand what we can go to that can work in that kind of way for us. Yesterday we were talking about the Buddha's method of like for a rotten peg, like driving it out with a one that's made of good wood, like that. I mean, in terms of different methodology that the Buddha taught, the one that we were working with yesterday is like that, driving out the old peg with the new peg. If one peg has gotten rotten or is not, functioning so well in its position, that's one of various methods. Yeah.
Also yesterday,
I want to mention one other part for this, and that is the relationship between ignorance or delusion and the others in this constellation. Bringing, seeing, and knowing, this basic mindfulness practice. The more seeing and knowing there is, the less the ignorance. The less the ignorance is able to itself support and fuel the other factors. Because the kind of greed, the kind of lust that's unwise, unhealthy, destructive, with the decrease of the ignorance, the tendency for that to continue is like the support, main support for it is rooted in ignorance. When we bring the seeing and knowing in there, the ignorance decreases, and it's like undermining the foundation of the anger, of the hatred, of the compulsive, consuming kind of desires. It's undermining that. So this is, this mindfulness stuff is actually the mindfulness and the clear comprehension, or like the seeing and knowing part, the growth of the seeing and knowing and allowing our life energy to flow into that, and that the increasing of that, as it increases, ignorance decreases proportionately. It's like a law of nature. There's no way that it can be otherwise. And whatever was built up on the foundation of misunderstandings, of not knowing clearly what the things are, how they're working, that part gets denurtured. That part becomes unsupported and even not tenable. It's so nice how it works. It's really fantastic. I didn't realize earlier on with this path of practice how these things worked. It's actually so simple, so brilliant. So, I think that was the last, and I don't know if...
Sure.
Yeah?
I won't accept the invitation.
Yeah?
I think people want to go.
Yes? Is it okay to ask me afterwards?
Yeah. Probably
okay.
Much better idea.
Still okay to have tea time?
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Okay. I heard that the group used to meet later, like starting at 7:45 or this kind of thing.
So much happiness for it starting earlier.